I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rosanna.
And on this podcast, we explore how to take life off autopilot
and relentlessly pursue a life worth living
together.
Welcome to episode 11, Look at Faces, Not Devices. On this episode, we will be using research to dive into discussion on technology and devices and the influence it has on our relationships, our health, and our day-to-day lives. We need to remember that our lives are what we pay attention to. So this episode is really all about challenging us to really look at how much are we paying attention to our devices and maybe not to what's right in front of us as we live in an age with unregulated access to attention and irrelevant information.
Yeah, I think that screens slowly have infiltrated just our day-to-day business. So much so that, I mean, for a number of years now, a lot of people have recoiled from this, like, wait a minute, I want to pay attention to something other than a screen. And we realize how difficult that can be because of all the number of ways that we rely on them for work and for entertainment and for information and so on.
And I mean, I'm more than thankful for those things. I am able to grocery shop from my phone, sign up my kids for classes from my phone, conduct my business from my phone. I mean, it's all there. Mm-hmm. Making it very easy to access and to do those things at any time, but...
That's a double-edged sword then.
It's like, correct.
Wait, I can do this at any time? That's great. Oh, shoot, I am doing this now at any time.
And every time.
And every time. And there is plenty of perks to take advantage of. And I think down the road as well in this show, we should talk about some of those perks in a future episode. But I think there's some things, you know, one of our keywords is intentionality. And so one of these is definitely one of the areas where we have to be intentional with to make sure that we're using them in the best ways, but avoiding the pitfalls as well.
Right. And when we talked about doing this episode with this title, with the intention of even looking at the way in which we use technology and the way in which perhaps we're overusing, I felt really guilty because I will confess that I am on my phone a lot. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's for good things and other times it's very mindless.
Yeah.
And so now this past week, I've caught myself just paying greater attention to, like, do I need to be on my phone right now? And if the answer is no, I've been leaving my phone like in a different room just so I'm not tempted to just grab it and idly scroll and see what the world is up to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when the radio was invented, there was some pushback because now people 24/7 could have access to information from the airwaves. And there was one person who criticized that. Great, now I can learn that so-and-so, he named some like distant personality. Now I can learn that so-and-so has the flu. And his point was, I didn't really need to know that this person, what their health status was. As we get into today's episode, the format for today will be like this. Rosanna and I both decided to independently research some facts and figures related to screen use in the American household. And we're going to share some of what we found with one another live right now. And we have some questions that we've paired with each of the research bits to challenge one another with as well. Speaking of challenges, at the end, the part we're both nervous about is that we have each devised a challenge for us to embark on right after this episode. And so I'm going to share with Rosanna a challenge that we'll both do, and she has another screen-related challenge that we're both going to do as well. And I'm really nervous about hearing what yours is, and I'm nervous about just doing these challenges that I think will push us in the right direction, but maybe will be, the word challenge is maybe the appropriate word because it'll be hard to do.
Yeah, and hopefully this will challenge you to kind of maybe think your device and screen usage and come up with your own challenge or, you know, join us in our challenge of trying to kind of put some limitations on that so that you can be intentional with your time in better ways.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I want to go first with my first fact and figure because I think it'll pertain to all the rest. I did some original research for this show. And I went around and I counted how many screens we have in our house.
Okay. And did you break them up into category or you just like
total number? Oh, we could. I mean, yeah, just total number.
Okay.
So off the top of your head, what's your guess?
Oh, gosh. 2, 4, 6, 8. 12.
Yeah, it's 12. Good guess. Did you?
No, I just literally, I was like, well, I just like, okay, the two of these, three of these. I just, so it was a guess.
Yeah. And so I never really counted them before, but there's only six of us. So we really have a two screen, two person ratio in this household. And again, I don't think that's good. I don't think that's bad, but that's something to be aware of. And how many screens do we use on a daily basis? How many screens are the kids using on a daily basis? I think that's just one thing to be cognizant of.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, like, allocate that. Because I was like, the kids don't have, other than a Nintendo Switch, they don't have a personal device.
No, they do.
The kids each have a personal device?
They do.
They don't each have, like, an iPad or a tablet.
No, but they have a Chromebook from school.
Yeah, but they don't really use those very much.
But those are screens in the household, okay. And at various times they are used. So it did make the count.
But that's two of four children, because then two still right. don't well, have
Yeah, it goes
devices.
Into the total.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So I don't have devices. A question attached to that, but I think that's one thing to keep in mind as we talk about some of the other things.
Well, let's talk about what we have, though. Don't you think people are interested?
Okay. Fire away.
Okay, so we have two TVs.
Two.
We have one in our family room where, like, we watch TV as, like, a family, or the kids watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
We have made the choice to not have TVs in our bedrooms.
Yeah.
That's
no
been...
No TVs in the bedrooms. Right. For the most part.
For the most part. Okay. Well, you're right.
We have screens.
We have iPads and whatnot. Okay. So two TVs, and then we have one in the basement that we use for...
Mainly for working out.
For working out. Mm-hmm. So it's people don't go down there to watch TV. It's more for working out. So we have two of those. Two cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
Two iPads.
We have three.
How do we have three?
I have one for work.
Okay.
We have your device.
Okay.
And then we also have this one that we're recording on right now.
Oh, hey there. Okay. All right. So three iPads. So two TVs, two cell phones, mm-hmm. three iPads. And
two
then
Chromebooks.
Two Chromebooks. And then you and I both have a...
Then there's laptops.
Laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, does this count? You also have a smartwatch.
Smartwatch.
I think that's a screen. I think that counts. I think that moves the count up to 13.
Well, what about our Google Home Hub then? Is that a screen?
Oh, God. I forgot about that. That's 14. See, you see how insidious these things are? So there's so many of them. And we do have certain, I think, rules and barriers and precautions, like no TVs in the bedrooms, which I think is a great rule, but we also pretty easily violate that as well with our, especially now that we... just with e-learning and the way we kind of set up our household during COVID, we've been spending, I think, a little bit more time with various screens, whether for work or for play
in
the bedrooms.
Yeah, too. In rooms that we don't usually use them or mm-hmm. utilize them, but need to because of needing privacy and quiet.
At times, yeah.
All right,
so that's my original research, but we can dive into some of the other things that we found.
Okay, so do you want me to go ahead and just share my first one?
Yeah, what do you got?
All right, so this comes from National Geographic, and the title was Smartphones Revolutionize Our Lives, But at What Cost? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to read directly, and then just there's kind of two things to pull out at the end. So it says, our use of smartphones has effectively changed the geography of our minds, creating a distractive off-ramp for every thought we may have on our own. What I've seen in the last 6 to 8 years is a massive paradigm shift. Much of the attentional resource that we devoted to our personal ecosystem has been shifted to what's virtual. And that was according to Larry Rosen, co-author of The Distracted Mind, Ancient Brains in a High-Tech World. So basically he sums it up by saying that means you are not attending to what's in front of you. We see this in parenting. You're not focusing on your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even focusing on what you're watching on TV because you're second screening. It's affecting every aspect of our lives.
So we're like on our phone while we're watching TV?
We're on our phone while we're watching TV, right? Mm-hmm. Or we're working on our personal laptop or our business laptop while we're watching TV.
Yeah.
So it's in, right?
There's too many screens. We can't even pay attention to one screen at a time.
To one screen at a time.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of pull that out with parenting. It says you're not focusing on your kids because you constantly have a screen in front of you. And so I was like, what are the implications for our kids if when they are talking to us or when they do approach us, we're not even looking at or acknowledging them because we're down looking at our screen.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether we're conducting business on it or we're socializing with a friend or we're buying something on Amazon or placing a grocery order, what do you think that impact will have on our children over time? What does that teach them? What does that show them? What do they internalize from that if that's what they see every time they come to us?
All right. So I actually have some similar research on this too. And I thought there might be some overlap. So I'm going to share this and then I think it'll give us a little more to go off of with that.
Okay.
All right, so you shared the word second screening. I'm going to share with you the term technoference.
Okay.
It's like interference, but it's technology kind of interfering with, like you're saying, like these human face-to-face interactions.
Okay.
So one thing I wanted to summarize is that there has been this study that's been out for some time. It actually was initiated in the 70s, but it's been replicated with technology now, and it's called the still face study. So you take an infant and it's interacting with its mother, and the mother just goes still-faced. No expression, no interaction. It's just a human face, but no human emotion in it.
Okay.
It creeps the baby out, as you can imagine. It creeps anybody out. This is actually replicated without us realizing it with our technology. Because what kind of face do we have when we're interacting with most of our technology? A still face. So when the child is looking at us, having this expressionless kind of face as we're scrolling through a phone or looking at a work laptop, they are equally creeped out and disconnected from their parent during those instances.
Okay.
All right. So that's one thing that I want to summarize. I'll read this bit. And this was actually summarized in a post. I found it on LinkedIn. It's written by Arianna Huffington. And it's part of a whole bunch of facts and figures that she shares. It says, in a large international survey of 6,000 parents and children from countries in North America, South America, Asia, Europe, over half the children said their parents checked their devices too frequently, and 32% of children reported feeling unimportant as a result. And that's a huge percentage of kids, and I think our kids notice it, and I think all children will notice this, right? They want attention from their parents, and without even intending this to happen, we have so many screens that and they're so addictive, like they just draw our eye and capture our attention, that without even realizing it, our kids are going to see us on these devices. So that really got me thinking, like when one of our children walks into the room, or when you walk into the room, what are you going to see me doing? Are you going to see me like looking at a screen or looking at a phone? Or if I'm already in the room with you, is instead of paying attention to you or to one of the kids, am I going to take that out and let that absorb my attention? That's been one of the questions on my mind as we've been researching this a little bit.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that stands out too amongst some of the research is that gosh, now I'm just completely drawing a blank. Let me just shift to the kids coming into a room and seeing us on devices.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that really just has stood out is our daughter, like, walking into a room and, like, seeing me on a phone and saying, I wish I could have a phone like you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? She's not saying, I wish I could be a loving, caring mother like you, or I wish, you know, it's like, oh, mm-hmm. I wish I could have a phone like you, because it becomes, like, this point of envy, right? Because she sees that it's like important to me and I have it with me, and now she wants to emulate that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, that's kind of like a scary, just a scary fact that, like, because it's with me all the time, she knows that, and that's now something that she wants to emulate and something that she wants.
Yeah, I think that's true with all of our kids. Like, mom has a phone, dad has a phone. These are obviously fun and important. I want that too. And I think that's true. Like, whatever parents are doing that seems important or seems frequent, like, kids are just going to imitate that. And I see that with our, particularly with our phone use, but even just screens, you know, there, it feels like if I'm working on a screen, it's because I have something very, you know, adult and important that I need to attend to at that moment.
Right.
The kids don't distinguish that in front of them. Like, why can't I go on a screen? And they are emulating that behavior that we're modeling for them.
Well, and I think sometimes I've read articles on, like, scarymommy.com. They have all kinds of articles about, like, parenting, and, like, now we're in the, like, overparenting generation, where, like, when we were kids and even kids before us, like, you know, the kids would on a summer day, like, you know, they'd have breakfast and they'd leave and they'd say, be home by dark, or be home by dinner. And the kids, like, had the autonomy just to, like, be around town and on their bikes and with their friends. And now we're a generation of parents where, like, we're with our kids all the time, and we're, like, you know, helicopter parents and this and that. And parents are never given any kind of, like, release from their children because they're too busy overparenting. And so there's articles that will basically say, like, let the mom mindlessly scroll on her phone when she's at the park, because it's the first time she's had, like, time to kind of, like, sink back and withdraw. And so if she withdraws on her phone, don't judge her, because she's been with her kids all day and, you know, she can't be on top of her kids. And so just, like, let her shrink back. And so, like, I've kind of seen, like, putting technology and like using it as a way to escape or withdraw from like overparenting, right? Mm-hmm. To like recoil.
Yeah.
Because most of your day is spent like with your kids.
Yeah. I feel like that's true. Although maybe it's important then to like distinguish between the two, because some of the things that I was reading talked about how parents are often, they're more physically present with their kids, but it can be critiqued for only really being half there, having this divided attention where they're sort of paying attention and interacting with their kids, but they're not getting the same eye contact, not getting the same kind of emotional input.
Okay.
Because of the screens. So maybe that's an important thing for us to think about, is when we're with our kids, if we want to try to make the most of that time, is making sure that they do genuinely have our attention. And then when it's time to relax or recoil or do some work or whatever we want to do, that we can maybe even do that more freely as well.
And I like that. And I think that's great for everyone to hear, is that you don't need to spend 12 hours a day with your child. Plenty of parents are dual income working families. So there's not a mom or a dad that's home all day, every day mm-hmm. with those kids. So even if you're only with them for those 4 hours, then those 4 hours you're all in. Mm-hmm. And then those other 8 hours are like your work, your pleasure, your, you know, free time, your leisure. So that just be present when you're there and don't let those distractions creep in.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So I had a few things related to kids and to parenting, but I want to shift to something a little bit different on this too. I read this. This comes from Vox.com. Okay. And this was an interesting article because it summarized all kinds of research. And we'll include links to all of these in our show notes. So one of the things that they ended up citing here was that they said, rather than using devices continually, we tend to check them throughout the day. On average, people open their phones how many times a day? What's your guess?
100?
Oh, no, 58
okay.
was the average. So I'm sure some people are, you know, far higher, some are far lower. A lot of those times are even during the workday. So when you're at work, like, so I thought this was interesting too, because I find, you know, myself, even like if my phone is in my pocket, when I just have like a moment where I'm even quasi liberated from paying, you know, strict attention to anything immediately around me, my hand just kind of goes to my pocket. I flick it open and I don't even know what I want from it. And I don't know if any of you listeners
comfort,
have had the same experience.
Comfort, security, right?
Right.
Acknowledgement.
It's like, I don't actually need anything on this device right now, but yet here it is. I flick it open and it's like my thumb is one step ahead of me. Like it's going to press on, you know, it's going to open my mail for the 50th time, or it's going to go to like social media or, you know, some other app that I have. And without really needing to. And I think this, you know, this bit that I found points to that. So we're constantly just opening these phones. There can't possibly be 58 things that we have to do on our phone that require pressing attention throughout the day. It's much more of this passive habit where it just comes out, we flick it open, and then sometimes just quickly flick it closed and move on. And I think that it's got to drive you nuts if you actually stop to think about how many times you're just looking at this screen without really having intention to eat or to do anything. It's like opening the pantry, and it's like you're not hungry. It's like, I'm just passing by the pantry. I'm going to open it up and see what's in there.
But I'm kind of thinking,
I'm not
going to
eat anything.
What did we used to do, right? If we flick on our phones 58 times during the day, during idle moments, what did we used to fill those idle moments with? What, like, did we used to walk over to the pantry and grab a snack?
We had to have been miserable.
Right. Like, what did we do?
Yeah.
But I think that's a good thing to think about. Like, there's all these idle minutes. And, you know, a lot of people will say, like, there's not enough time in the day to accomplish all of your goals or your dreams or work towards something or have a side hustle. Yet we've got all this time to know what Kim Kardashian is doing on Instagram, mm-hmm. and, you know, what's the latest with Alex Trebek's cancer. Like, all of these things that we don't necessarily need to know we're seeking out, but yet we're wasting some of that valuable time. Dr. Susanna E. Flores, who is a clinical psychologist and an author of Face Hooked, How Facebook Affects Our Emotions, Relationships, and Lives, agrees that smartphones are useful in numerous ways, but can also cause friction in our lives. And she says, of course, there's an addiction aspect. They're always within arm's reach. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of articles that I came across, and it's like, cell phones are designed to be addicted. they're designed to get you to take them out of your pocket and click on something and find something. And like they're designed, that's, we can't help ourselves. Mm-hmm. We literally can't help ourselves. So it's that intentional knowing, like, I have this device in my pocket, you know, this device that I spent $1,300 on is in my pocket and I want to look at it.
This and we have this psychological thing. Attachment to it.
Yes.
Have you ever been somewhere and you've suddenly realized you don't have your phone?
Yeah, I went to the eye doctor yesterday. Yeah. So Juliet and I had appointments and I got in the car and we were waiting and I was just like standing there and we were going to have to wait because the doctor was running late, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like reach into my purse, I go to grab my phone and I'm like, it's not
right,
here.
You start patting all your pockets. Like, shoot, where did I leave it? What am I going to do now?
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes you could be like, all right, well, it's fine. I guess I'll just, you know, stand here and think.
Engage or with look. Someone. Yeah. Read yeah. something that's not on a screen. Now. Yeah. Right.
But there are, and I didn't end up bringing in any research about this, but I have read in the past that this there are real withdrawal symptoms that people experience when separated from their screens.
But I think we do need to be more cognizant of separating ourselves from our screens, and replacing those idle behaviors that don't produce anything. And not saying that you have to like produce something if you're idle, but like, why aren't we like mindfully meditating or like, you know, taking a step back or just like thinking or breathing or like, right? Nothing that's like going to like calm us down. It's, you know, we log onto Facebook and we, you know, get infuriated by a post someone leaves or like.
Oh, another vocab word I learned while researching, okay. Doom scrolling.
Doom scrolling. Yeah. Tell me more.
Just like what you said, like there's can be a lot of negativity on certain sources that we look at and they can give rise to these negative emotions. And I don't know if anyone's standing around thinking, you know what, I haven't been angry in the last hour. But we do tend to gravitate sometimes towards things that create these negative emotions and sometimes even engaging with it ourselves. So that's doom scrolling, is when you're scrolling through things, usually on your smartphone, that are sort of feeding these negative emotions.
All right, so kind of to piggyback with doom scrolling, let's talk a little bit more about conflict. So Dr. Flores talks a little bit more about this. She says, in many ways, digital communication appears to be altering our comfort levels with direct and honest communication and conflict resolution. Doing so will inevitably negatively affect our relationships, since important discussions should be done in person or at the very least over the phone so that misunderstandings could be minimized.
Oh, texting compounds the problem.
And so I know you're very like anti-text. You're not on your phone a lot. And you often tell me you should not be discussing this over text because now you're misconstruing what she's saying. She's misconstruing what you're saying. Now you both are like in separate spots having animosity in these feelings. Like, why don't you just talk? Yeah. And it basically, you know, like it's just this inability to like want to like have to like resolve a conflict with someone. Like we're hiding behind our screens. Mm-hmm. So not only are we using them, you know, to fill time and to distract us, but we're hiding behind them a lot of the time, right? And I mean, that goes to, you know, in relation to like, you know, posting only your best self and all of that, but like we're hiding behind our phone. There's all of those, you know, naysayers and internet trolls that like, oh, they can whip out their phone or their computer and leave a nasty review or bag on somebody.
The YouTube comment section is not where you go to get smarter in most cases. Facebook can often, you know, just kind of breed these negative conversations where they're so unproductive. Like I want people to share their thoughts and experiences and to read those and learn from them, but it just gets,
it's often
so volatile so quickly.
Polarizing yeah. comments, and we've lost all reason to just scroll past. Like, oh, I don't agree with that. I'm going to scroll past. It's, oh, now I'm fired up and I'm going to tear you to shreds. So mm-hmm. it's just interesting that like
changing the world.
Yeah, we can communicate with each other on opposite ends of the world and make connections with people we would have never met, which are great things. But then at the same time, we're either, you know, hiding behind things and trying to solve conflicts, not in person, not face to face. And it's giving us this inability to like do it because now we're not forced to have to call somebody and say, hey, you know, this is where I'm coming from. Like we don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. We just kind of hide behind and become negative.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was interesting.
Mm. One little thing I've noticed too is that like sometimes when you wanted to call someone back in the day, you would just call them, right? You'd have their phone number and you'd call and then they'd answer the phone. Now I find myself like setting up phone conversations. It's like, is it okay if I call you? Well, don't call me now, call me later. And like, we always have to schedule in a phone conversation too. So if there's this whole like text preamble just to get to the voice conversation.
Well, and then like, it's like people are mentally preparing to have a conversation with you because they'd rather just text you like, oh, now they have to be kind and cordial, or they have to like anticipate this conversation that you want to have. And
it's live.
We're yeah. putting like more distance, you know, between people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of like this podcast. We just turn on the mic. We turn on the screens. If we fumble, if we forget something, like, we don't have a script here. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we'll read something, but...
Yeah, just a few facts and figures.
We're just talking. And is the art of talking gone? Is the art of having a conversation, sharing your feelings, even just acknowledging someone else's perspective? Like, is this part of it? Like, is this shift in technology, is this where the disconnect is happening? And is this why it's more important than ever to invite people into your home, to share where you're coming from, your experiences, to like engage in that? Because we're leaving it to texting and, mm-hmm. you know, internet trolls to, you know, where we get our feedback and our information. And that's not what life is about.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I don't think it's the end of conversation. And I can think of, you know, I'd say everybody that I know is really engaging to speak with. I think the problem is we maybe just don't do it as often as we used to, like before we had all these screens and technology. And even like we had television and video games growing up, but I think the hidden factor is the portability of all of that now. Like wherever we go and anytime we want them, we can use them in addition to our smartphones and tablets and laptops and those kinds of things.
Well, did you remember when we told the kids that like we were not bringing the Nintendo Switch on our 2-week road trip? They were like, wait, what?
What are we gonna do?
Or when we showed up to our friend's house in Colorado and their children wanted screen time and they said, well, will your kids be having screen time? And we said, well, we didn't bring screens for them. And mm-hmm. they were like, oh, you didn't bring screens for them? No, we did not bring personal screens for everybody. The Chromebooks are at home. Mm-hmm. You know, we brought one iPad that attached to the back of the headrest in the car for movies, but we still made them wait like 8 hours before we turned anything. Like,
yeah, look out the window, the original drive-by movie.
Yeah, so it's just interesting that you're right, because of portability, we can take them anywhere.
Yeah. All right, who went last without the research?
I don't know. I just ended with that digital communication and like the in-person and not being able to resolve conflicts. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's your turn to go.
Okay, I have one more and then we can get into our challenges. All right, here's this one. Sleep is the category.
My last one has to do with sleep too.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right, well, let's talk about it. Are we like reading each other's minds here? We have pretty much research related to the same couple domains.
We've been together 22 years, married 14. There's some overlap.
There's a little overlap.
All right.
All right, so this is going to amble into a few different areas. The first, and I got this from a couple of different sources, one of which is, I forget the name of it, sleep.org, I believe.
Yeah, that's where mine comes from.
Okay.
The content created by the National Sleep Foundation, but it was on sleep.org.
That's right. So the first thing that I found was that is that when your phone is within arm's reach, you'll be tempted to check news outlets, think about the current crisis, which will cause more stress because you have, again, like 24/7 access to things to information that can be more stressful than accessing it on a lighter schedule. 90% of people in the U.S. admit to using a tech device during the hour before they go to bed. And this can negatively affect your sleep in a number of ways. They list a few, but it's physiologically and psychologically stimulating so that it can be harder to fall asleep. And they're not discriminating here between different kinds of screens. It could be, you know, TV, video games, phone, work, whatever. But all of that is a type of stimulation that does not really allow your body to or your mind to fully get into sleep. So we're losing out on uninterrupted sleep. We're losing out on deep sleep. We're losing out on just hours of sleep. I don't know how many times you crawled into bed thinking, I'm just going to look at this, and then a whole hour goes by, right?
Yeah.
Or you could have been sleeping. So there's a bunch of research out there about how using TVs, tablets, smartphones, laptops, any other device before bed delays your body's internal clock suppresses the release of sleep-inducing hormone melatonin, and it makes sleep more difficult. So, are we, you and I, like, are we losing out on some of the health benefits of good sleep because of the intrusion of screens?
I would say yes.
Can we change our habits?
I think we do. I know you're really good about, really one of the last things you do before you go to bed is you always read. And for you, sometimes it's a sentence and you're asleep.
And then I'm out.
Right. So I think that's good because your mind, it is. It's like unwinding. It's coming down very naturally. And sometimes you read for a while. But something you've done more of most recently, which kind of boggles my mind, is like that you're listening to like podcasts and YouTube things and you're like drifting off to sleep with these people's like voices and whatnot in your heads and with earphones in and the phone right there. Like, that can't be good. That can't be healthy. So, but I'm just as guilty because the very last thing that I'm always looking at is my phone, right? I'm scrolling Instagram one last time, or I'm on Facebook one last time, or I'm texting a girlfriend about something, right? So I am not without faults, and nor should I throw stones at anybody. But, you know, I think part of the whole phone thing is its proximity. And so there are other studies out there that say, even if you're not looking at your phone in that hour before bed, the fact of having devices in your bedroom also disturbs like your sleep and your sleep cycles. And like, there's, I can't quote for you any specific piece of research about it, but it's like, other people are pushing for not even having those devices in your room. They're saying, get an old-fashioned alarm clock. Like, leave the phones out of the room. Don't let them be a part of your sleep cycle.
I've heard about that with education. Like, students who have a phone on their desk or even in their bag are remotely aware of its presence. And so if it is across the room or if it is outside of the classroom, that helps this bigger feeling of release and greater attention. I've heard that even with parenting, where they, if your children have phones, that you charge it in your room, so your children, your child doesn't have it in their room. But I did really, for the first time, as far as like just adults' personal habits go, like read over the last week when we were preparing for this, that the same thing, that even just having it around you when you're trying to sleep or at any other time, it has the same impact. And the more you can physically distance yourself, the more detachment you'll be able to enjoy.
Yeah. So I think one of the questions to really look at this point is we reach for our phones because we're either bored, uncomfortable, stressed, lonely, or restless or overwhelmed. So like the question to ask yourself is like,
can I add one more to that?
Yeah.
I would say that we are increasingly uncomfortable with our own, the sound of our own voice.
So you're talking about the sound of our own voice, like the thoughts in your head.
Our own internal monologue.
Okay.
Ever since entertainment, and I think of the iPod, where it's like portable music, you can entertain yourself with this anywhere. I think it's very easy to tune into these kinds of things that we have access to anywhere, and it just tunes out any opportunity for us to be thinking. And when we are alone with our thoughts, you know, I've read like one philosopher that I like says, a man who finds himself alone is in good company. Meaning that, like, if you can be alone with your own thoughts, that can be a really good thing. But how often are we ever alone with our thoughts?
Right. How often do we create space where we go out and say, like, I'm gonna take a run right now, and I'm not gonna fill my ears with a podcast or music, or I'm gonna go for a walk, or I'm gonna go find a tree,
and drive in a car,
and sit and
just sitting around the house,
just think, like let my thoughts take me to where I need to go, or let me tune into like maybe what my heart is telling me, or where I'm feeling led, and we don't create those scenarios, therefore oftentimes we feel lost.
Yeah.
And when we feel lost, we turn to these devices to fill us with something, even if it's meaningless.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully if you are listening to this, one of those times you're being filled with a great meaning and value. But at the same time, I think like what we're saying is that there's something to be intentional about. Find the things that are valuable to tune into, but also find the time to let your thoughts be your thoughts and engage with them, even if they are negative or uncomfortable, so that you can, I think, fully just experience and kind of roll through whatever kind of emotional or thoughtful process your mind needs to.
All right. Yeah. I mean, what I was going to finish that with is like, ask yourself, what do you really need at this moment? you know? So if you're feeling bored, uncomfortable, stressed, lonely, restless, confused, what is it that you really need? Mm-hmm. Do you need more Facebook? Probably not. Maybe you need a walk. Maybe mm-hmm. you need a glass of water. Maybe you need some time to yourself. Like, what is it that you need? Mm-hmm.
Or just focus on and attention on what you are doing at that moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, it was that same kind of chunk of mm-hmm. information that I had from sleep.org. But do you want to go into challenges? Do you think it's an appropriate time, or is there something you want to add?
No, let's dive into it. We have our challenges. This is the moment I've been somewhat looking forward to and somewhat dreading. Do you want to go first?
Well, I don't know that mine is, it's not earth shattering, but for me, it's just, it has more to do with intentionality. And so it's this. Okay. I want to engage in a life that isn't focused on FOMO, which is fear of missing out, right? Like I'm okay. checking these feeds, social media, what people are posting, what people are commenting on my posts, what they're saying, mm-hmm. right? Because I have a fear of missing out. So I want to know it all. I want to
see it right away. And yeah.
Okay. I no longer want to have JOMO, joy of missing out. I want to enjoy my life.
I haven't heard that before.
Okay, what? So.
All right, so you want JOMO.
I want joy of missing out. Okay, yeah. Life without recording, documenting every moment, not having my phone super handy or with me all the time so that in an idle moment I can check it. But we've talked about this in These Are the Days. Mm-hmm. Being present in my day. When I'm with my kids, I'm with my kids. When I'm working, I'm working. You know, I'm not, you know, looking at leisure stuff when I should be working. Focusing on what's in front of me at that moment. Mm-hmm. Taking the time to plan for the future. So, and not missing out on the joy that's right in front of me because I am more comfortable taking something out and looking at it.
Okay. All right. So what's the challenge then?
So the challenge is for me to physically, we've been physically distancing, right, mm-hmm. from people and places and things. Mm-hmm. It's time for me to physically distance myself from my phone. So I know you're laughing.
I think that's good. Just in putting, like, I'm going to social distance from my phone right now.
I am.
We almost need to sit down and have a conversation with our phone and say, hey.
Like, just so you know.
Okay. My challenge actually goes along with that too. Okay. So maybe we'll have more like one challenge, and I tried to frame mine a little bit more specifically. Okay. So this is maybe one way to pursue JOMO.
Okay. JOMO.
All right. So I think that the challenge for both of us I'd like to put on the table is no being on screens when someone else is in the room.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is like if I have work I need to do, I'm going to like excuse myself to where we have our desk set up. I'm going to do work then during a specific amount of time in a specific place. And if someone walks in during that, like I can't help that they're walking in and inviting themselves in. If I'm in the kitchen, for example, and we're hanging out, we're making breakfast, no phone, no work, no screen.
Okay.
So really, if we're going to access screen time, I think there are like two circumstances. One is if it's agreed that that's what we're doing together. So like if we're going to watch something together, I would say that that's okay.
Okay.
And I would say the other thing is that it would, otherwise it's got to be separate and intentional.
Okay.
So I've got to have like a set aside time where like, I got to go do this on the screen. I'm going to do it for this amount of time, but then I'm going to go back to other people without the screen with me.
Okay.
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 All right. So we got that out of the bag. We're gonna do this for 1 week. Let's do it for 1 week.
We'll do it for 1 week.
Here's my proposal. We'll do this for 1 week. We will compose kind of a blog post each to summarize our experiences. And
okay, I think that's fair.
And then we'll put that out there for everyone to read and to comment on. If you're listening to this, feel free to take up the same challenge as well. Or maybe you want to challenge yourself or a significant other with something that is more pertinent to you guys. So we laid out a few bits of research. I think we gained a lot even just from that process of researching. And we encourage you to maybe look up some facts and figures related to screen time, related to phone use for yourself and for your family, and see what kind of takeaways you might be able to have. And we'd love for you to comment on this and share with us some of your experiences related to screens. If you haven't yet, please feel free to visit therelentlesspursuitpodcast.com, where you can see more of our posts. You can read show notes and get links from everything that we mentioned today, and leave your own comments and feedback for us. And also, if you haven't yet, please leave us a 5-star rating and a raving review that makes us feel pretty darn good and helps other folks find us as well. So thanks for tuning in to episode 11. And next week is episode 12. It's our last episode of season one.
Which seems crazy.
So looking forward
to
bringing that to you guys as well. So thanks for listening. We hope you have a great rest of your day.
See you later.